Hello there, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Books on the Move. My name is Danielle, and oh my gosh, it's February 4th. It's a winter day, and yet it feels like a beautiful spring day. It would be a missed opportunity for me not to take a walk. In fact, I actually didn't even think of it. My mother thought of it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, why wouldn't I do that? Just, I don't know. But regardless, I'm taking a walk late in the afternoon. I started the walk by deciding, I don't know what I was thinking, wearing Uggs and my nice pants, but I was gonna wear leggings, but I thought, you know what, I wanna wear jeans. Don't ask me why. And I put on my nice burgundy pants and jeans, and I slipped in mud to partially catch myself, because I didn't fall entirely, didn't fall entirely, kind of like caught myself with my shin, which is like, oh great, my good pants just got in the mud, but also with my Ugg boots, which I've had since I was like 16, so not a big deal, but like literally they dug into the mud, so they're basically ruined. So fun start to the walk. Oh wow. So I went back home because literally I didn't even start the walk. I was literally going down a hill to walk. So not the fun way to begin. But anyway, sorry if those sentences were weird. I just stopped recording for a moment, and when you do that, sometimes you lose your train of thought. So, you know, or where you left off in a sentence, it's all good. Actually, I'm gonna walk the opposite direction. Yeah, I'm gonna walk the opposite way. So anyway, so with all that being said, let's begin the episode. And I'm actually walking by right now. I mentioned on an episode prior, I was supposed to say previous, but then I went to prior, and so I was like, prior. We have a little free library here, and I put a ton of books in there. Like, I unloaded a ton of books. And the great thing about that is that I hope people will be introduced to a ton of new, you know, novels and such. The not so great part of that is that I'm pretty sure all my books I dropped off are literally still there. So that's a fun thing. And okay, just another side note, right now I live right by a meat plant, more specifically a pork plant, and it smells like barbecue right now, and I was thinking, why? Somebody can't be cooking, can they? No, it's probably the meat plant. Oh well. So, interesting enough, this plant, like, a lot of people don't like it in terms of, obviously, if they're vegetarian. We actually get a lot of protesters here. I don't have an opinion either way, but I definitely understand why they're protesting. Makes sense. But that's not what this episode is about today. Today we're talking about my favorite books, right? That's what I'm talking about? Yes, that's what I am talking about. So, I told you I would record an episode like this, and it's been a while. Just haven't really read that many books. If you listen to my previous episode, where I talked about the book I read this year thus far, The Wizard's Tide, then you'll know that I only read one book this year. So, it's not the best thing in the world. Not a good way to start off 2019, but you know, other things have been happening, which is why I haven't read that much. And hopefully I'll talk about that at some point this episode. But yeah, that's why. So this will help, you know, me get by. So I should stop talking about what this episode is not about and start talking about what this episode is about, which is favorite books. So without further ado, let's jump into it. So favorite books. My first favorite book of all time, that is not on my list anymore for, once you hear it, obvious reasons, was On the Banks of Plum Creek by Laura Ingalls Wilder. I first read that book when I was 10 years old. I remember certain parts of it. at least the reading of it, very vividly. I remember sitting on our spinny reclining chair and reading it. My uncle visiting for something. He was helping us repair something, I believe. And me just being so engrossed in the book and not wanting to put it down. That's not on this list, but I thought it would be an honorable mention. Hopefully I don't get pooped on right now. There's a ton of geese flying above me. It's all good. So anyway, it's an honorable mention. Laura Ingalls Wilder is not a particular author that I love. I don't really have any kind of opinion toward her, but I'm not a huge Little House fan, and none of the other books really struck me as anything worthy of that much praise. But Little House on Plum Creek really excited me as a kid. It was probably the only book that really got me excited, apart from like the first two. Like Farmer Boy, I couldn't even read. But anyway, so the first favorite book I'm going to talk about is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. So the history I have with this book is that I actually didn't know it was a novel until I ended up buying the copy that I own now at a thrift store. And you would think like a person who's like a huge literary person would know that this was a novel, but I actually thought it was a play. And you can't fault me for that because in middle school, my teacher, let's see, it was seventh grade, yeah, she had us read the play, A Christmas Carol. And from that point on, I just thought it was a play. And even then I thought, wait, like, it's not a novel? I thought it was. And you know, everybody grows up with A Christmas Carol. It's just so ingrained in our culture. Whether we want to grow up with it or not, it's there in so many stories, you know, pull from it in some capacity. So obviously I was familiar with it before reading the play. I grew up with Mickey's Christmas Carol, so it was kind of like it's not a terrible short little film, but it doesn't really capture what the book is essentially about. So in that regard, it's lacking, but it's not a bad adaptation, per se. It's just toned down. And we'll get to that in a second with Muppet Christmas Carol, but regardless, I found this book at a thrift store, and I was really intrigued because, like I said, I thought it was a play, and I was like, this is like one of those pieces of literature that you kind of have to read, you know? So I was like, oh, I need to buy this. So I did. I read it, I want to say, let's see, I guess 2013? Now I'm completely forgetting, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it was the most beautifully written book I'd ever picked up. And what I liked about it was how, just the language of it, how lyrical the book felt, how sort of it felt almost like this sacred text that felt more Christian than some Christians actually treat the holiday of Christmas. And it definitely offered this wisdom that I think is so particularly important today that I don't think is missing, because I'm not going to go on that tangent. That's just not correct. But I definitely think that it is an important text that people should read. I know people who just dislike the book, and they don't really have a particularly good reason. One friend I know doesn't like the ghosts, which to me is just kind of silly. Like, I think it's okay to be critical of something, but to just blindly say I don't like ghosts, it's just a bit, I don't know. Like, and I'll put on a personal level, like, I don't like horror movies because they scared the hell out of me. But, so even though I won't watch them, if you told me, like, oh, that's an incredible movie, you know, maybe I'd give it a chance. But, you know, I won't say that something's a bad movie just because it's a genre that scares me, you know? That's just unfair. So my point in saying that when all this is that Christmas Carol is incredible, and after reading it, it pushed me to watch the Muppet Christmas Carol, which ironically we owned on VHS when I was a kid. We had this big kind of bulky VHS tape of it, and I wasn't a huge Muppet fan as a kid, so we never watched it, like, ever. Like, I can't even remember a time we actually popped it in, and if we did, I don't remember. So, you know, watching it almost for the first time after I read the book, I was really excited. And I should note too, before I get into it, that one of my favorite lines of all time is in A Christmas Carol. Let's see if I can recite it. It's in stave 3, which is the Ghost of Christmas Present, and Scrooge is looking in on them, on Tiny Tim and Bob Cratchit's family, and Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim return from church, and, you know, Miss Cratchit says, you know, how was he at church? And then Bob Cratchit says, oh, as good and gold and better. He said he hoped people saw him in the church, that it would remind them who made lame beggars walk and blind men see. And that line just moves me every time. In fact, moves me to tears usually. I think I did a pretty good job reciting it there, because I'm pretty sure I just recited it word for word. But correct me if I'm wrong. So, but I think The Muppet Christmas Carol was on Netflix at the time, which is where I watched it. It's not there anymore, sadly, but I did watch it, and wow. It's literally my favorite Christmas movie. It eclipses all other Christmas movies for me. It is like the perfect adaptation, and I love it to death. It's something I watch every Christmas now, and it has my favorite line in it. It captures the book while still keeping the essence of the Muppets. It's a shame because the Muppets also did Treasure Island, which perhaps arguably is not as good as Christmas Carol, but, like, I think the Muppets had something really great in kind of adapting literary texts in their style, and it's a shame that they don't do it anymore. I shouldn't say they don't do it anymore. They do it in book form, which is, like, so weird to me because, like, the Muppets work on film. I don't think all of what they're wanting to put forth is going to be read properly on the page. I did buy the one book, which is Phantom of the Opera, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, let's move on to the next favorite book. We're 13 minutes in, I've only talked about one. Welcome back to the show, folks. Alright, so next episode, or next book, is Pride and Prejudice. So, by Jane Austen. In case you didn't know. So, Pride and Prejudice is a book that I came to because of the movie, sadly to say, which I know is not the best way to come to this particular text, because Pride and Prejudice exists on so many different planes that, like, it's very easy to misconstrue its core message, if you will, or what the characters are going for. Like, so many people sum it up as a love story, but it's so much deeper than that. Not that a love story can't be deep, but, like, Pride and Prejudice is partially that, but it's, like, many more things that might exist above it in terms of its genre and how you would describe it to people. But anyway, I did come to it through the movie, the 2005 adaptation with Keira Knightley, and the movie, I remember, really confused me, and I didn't get why it was a love story, which, maybe that was a good thing that I realized it, but I just, like, didn't get it. I really didn't. And so I watched it many other times trying to figure it out. Watching it several times, turns out it helps quite a bit. But, still, it's like, it still left me confused, but I ended up getting the book version, like with the movie cover art of Pride and Prejudice. So, I was able to read that. And let me see. Right. And I'm trying to make sure I'm still recording, because that would suck. So anyway, I read it in my senior year of high school, and I didn't know what to think of it, to be honest. I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I struggled a lot, and I kind of didn't think much of it after that, but ended up being assigned to read it in a women's studies course in college, and I fell in love with it at that point. So, really great. And I actually listened to a ton of podcasts studying the text. So, it's just a book that I inherently respect so much. Again, for the language, I think like Dickens, Jane Austen has such a unique voice that I appreciate with all my heart. And I think Pride and Prejudice is like this, such a dynamic and complex story that I think, like, some people, they'll pick it up and they'll think it's hard to understand. And in some ways it is, but I think that you have to think about the time period it was released. This book was intensely readable at the time, and I don't think that should be ignored. You know, it's just an important thing to think about. But yeah, it's an easy favorite, and actually might be reading it again come springtime, so maybe I'll be talking about it in some more depth at that point. So next book, next favorite, is Life of Pi by Jan Martel, I believe. I can't look it up right now, but I believe it's Jan Martel. Hang on. So, Life of Pi is a book. I actually heard of it, I think, in like 2010. It was, I think, assigned as a summer reading text for students. We had, in school, we had different levels of, like, so what your, like, in terms of, like, your learning curve. So we had 4.0, 5.0, and 6.0. 5.0 was average, 6.0 was above average, 4.0 was below average. make of that what you will. But the 4.0s were reading Life of Pi as their summer reading. I read All Quiet on the Western Front, but Life of Pi always just sounded intensely interesting to me, and I really wanted to pick it up, so I eventually did. I want to say 2014 or 13. I think it was 14. And one of those books, again, instantly fell in love with, mostly for the language, but also for this kind of simplistic yet complex story about a boy simply surviving on a raft with a tiger. And that's not even the whole book. The book is like, goes into depth about, you know, this man's past, or this boy, I guess. I don't know how old he is, I forget. But he's still a boy. He's definitely not a man. He's a man reflecting, I should say. Which I will say is a trope I hate, but it works pretty well. They did it more in the adaptation of the book, in the movie, and that was a bit frustrating, but it still exists in some capacity in the book. And yeah, I guess you'll find a trend that when a book is really well written, I can't help but love it. And I think also what I enjoyed about the book is that, this is another trend you might notice, that it's kind of spiritual observations. I think, like, for me personally, especially at that time in my life, I was so interested in you know, religion, specifically Christianity, but also specifically like how we could coexist with one another, disagreeing, but yet coming together in our disagreements. And so reading this book that was so spiritually dependent was very, very rewarding for me and kind of a bit of a teacher in a way. And that's something I appreciate quite a bit. Let me pause this for a second. Okay. I thought I just lost my recording, but I didn't. Ooh, that was bad. So I tried to like press record, and I ended up pressing play. That wasn't good. No, was it? And then I like paused it at a second. I was like, wait, if I click record, it's going to start recording in a second. So I quickly went to the end. Yeah. You don't need to know the details. It's recording. It's fine. All right. Moving on to the next book. So the next three books are all Marilynne Robinson books. So let me preempt all of them. Marilynne Robinson is my favorite author. There's no question about that in my mind. She is the most thought-provoking author I've ever encountered. She's very prolific in the sense that like what she accomplishes with her books is just pure genius, and they're very spiritually aware. And I guess let me talk about real quick how I heard of her. Marilynne Robinson I was introduced to my senior year of college. Again, I've always been very interested in Christianity, but at the time, what I was particularly interested in was Christian art, and art being made not to sell a religion, but art that was inherently Christian in its essence, if that's the right word, but yet wasn't trying to preach to you. It just, like, I read so many texts, kind of like Life of Pi, if you will, that presented its religion as a backdrop to the character and understanding the story and what the character wanted and the themes that the book was presenting. But I had so often read Christian books that were just trying to sell you something. They were like Lifetime movies except Christian, and obviously those exist today, but I just really hated them and I wanted to get away from it. Not only that, but I wanted to get away from that in general. It's not just books, it's movies, it's music, it's so many things, television, much more today than back then. But I really just was longing to experience Christian art in a way that wasn't talking down to me or trying to preach a specific message. So I guess, I'm trying to remember, it's 2013, it should have been 2013, I decided to take this Christian literature class. I was in a liberal arts college. I knew it wasn't going to be like talking down to me for sure. And my teacher, professor, I'd had for American Lit in the 20th or 19th century, 20th century, I believe. And I knew he was brilliant, and so I thought this is going to be a great class. And I was lucky to get in because I tried to get in before, I think, and it didn't work, or like the way our school handled it, they gave us like an assigned time when we could start finding classes, and if you were like a later time, then you know, sucked for you. And I think I had a later time, but fortunately this class, like, I think it was closed, but then somebody dropped it and I quickly got a seat, and thank God, because this class is easily one of the best classes I took in college. And of course it introduced me to Marilynne Robinson. So it introduced me to this book by Marilynne Robinson called Gilead, which we did read in class, but I didn't finish during the class. Ended up reading it afterward. I'm not a very good student, and or like somebody, like I could never do like book clubs. I mean, I do them, but like with one or two people, it doesn't work for me, because what ends up happening is like I don't do the reading, and that's just like school. It's like being assigned to something, and I don't want to do it. So that's why I didn't finish the book. But yeah, so anyway, but Gilead, so I ended up finishing reading it in that summer after I graduated, and my god, what a beautiful book. It won the Pulitzer Prize, I believe, in 2005, and man, does it deserve it. It deserves all the praise in the world. It's just a really good book, and it was so, it's very staked in its Christianity, its faith. It's basically about a preacher who's dying and is writing a letter to his son, because his son's very young and won't get to know him because he's so young. So he's writing a letter to him for him to remember him by. And it's just so beautiful. It's a book maybe I'll reread this year, I'm not sure, but that's all I'll really say about it. It's just, I remember reading it on like vacation. I have a picture of the books I was reading at the time. I was in Maryland, Ocean City, which is like one of my favorite places to go, and I was reading Gilead, this book called Sex God by Rob Bell. It doesn't sound as dirty as it actually, well, okay, it sounds dirtier than it actually is. I said that wrong. And what else did I read? Oh, A Clash of Kings, which is the second book in a Game of Thrones. So, yeah, it was like, not only was it a great book, but I read it at a time in my life that it was just, I was feeling great. I remember laying in bed and reading it and just listening to the ocean waves and the traffic outside, and just, I love Ocean City so much. But anyway, the next book I'm going to talk about is Home, also by Marilynne Robinson. It's the sequel to Gilead. Not really a sequel, but a continuation of it. This Gilead has spawned, if you will, like a series of books, but and they're all connected, but they're not like, it's not like Harry Potter, where like you have to read the first book to understand the second, and it's not like the second follows the first, and you know, it has a plot you can even talk about. In fact, there's not much of a plot in Marilynne Robinson's books, to be fair. And I love plotless stories, so there you go. But yeah, so Home technically is the sequel to Gilead, but it's not a sequel as you know it. So it's basically about the main character in the first book, John Ames. It's about his best friend. Specifically, it's from the point of view of his daughter named Glory. And again, wow, what a good book. Just an excellent, excellent book. And another one I need to reread, because if I forget Gilead, I forget Home even more. So I think I read that in 2014. So really excellent. Definitely have to reread it, but I can't really talk about it much, all except, once again, lyrical language. Beautifully written. Marilynne Robinson is such a good writer. So always remember that when you come to her. You won't be disappointed. And so, again, observant, clever in the way she talks about faith. I just love it. And she's so astute that it, like, it's like, oh my god, it hurts. She's so good at what she does. I love it. And then the other Marilynne Robinson book I'm going to talk about is Housekeeping. If you're going to come to Marilynne Robinson, Housekeeping might be the best approach to her. Like, if you're looking for a book, if you're like, where do I start with Marilynne Robinson? Start with Housekeeping. This was the first book she ever wrote, I believe in the 80s, might be 70s. It was made into a movie with I apologize, I forget the actress's name, but she was in a River Phoenix movie, that's all I know. But the movie's okay. I haven't seen it in a really long time, so maybe I'll rewatch it, but housekeeping is very different from the Gilead trilogy, but still, like, so well written. Very, like the cover of the book, very gray, very dismal, but also very hopeful. And again, like the writing, the way Marilyn Robinson writes about experiences and the way our minds understand them and shape them is so good. So good. Actually reread the book last year and it was just such a privilege. I remember when I first read it, it was in the summertime, 2014, and I remember my mom at the time at her job, she needed me to pick her up. We were going somewhere together and I was waiting for her out in the parking lot at her job and reading this book as the sun was setting, and like, God, it was just the best feeling. It's the best feeling when you're just sitting alone in beautiful weather outdoors and you get to read a good book. It's awesome. So yeah, that's Marilyn Robinson. I have one more book to talk about with her, but we're going to talk about that a little later. But the next book I want to talk about is Atonement by Ian McEwan. Right? I hope I'm saying that right. I always get his name confused with, I think the actor. I forget. Anyway, so Atonement, once again, is a book that I came to through Keira Knightley. I was a big fan of hers in high school. Again, I talked about Pride and Prejudice. Pirates of the Caribbean was another one. And I came to her through, what's it called? Or I came to this movie through her. And I think, like, at the time it was, like, really teased. They did a lot of behind the scenes about the movie. So, like, I saw a ton of, like, little snippets being released on YouTube when YouTube was, like, had videos that could only be under 10 minutes. It was, like, KiraWeb.com. And they would release a ton of clips from her movies and stuff and movie trailers, what have you. My back is killing me right now. And so I thought, like, wow, it looks so good. It just looked very intriguing to me, the book or the movie, and when I found out it was a book, I immediately bought it. I bought it with the movie cover art because I tend to do that. A lot of readers don't like that, but I do. I don't know. But anyway, so I ended up reading it. I didn't finish it before I saw the movie, but it was one of the first rated R movies I actually saw. Ooh, that didn't sound good. But yeah, the book, I remember reading it. My mom was getting her nails done, and I remember reading it at a nail salon while I was waiting for her. Fun times there, but it's my favorite book, but I will say that the ending, or more so the war aspects of it, kind of drag, but the book itself, I mean, wow, it's so good. Especially, like, the first part with the whole, like, it's narrated by a girl named Bryony, and, or from her perspective, I should say, and it's just so good how it's written and talking about, like, it's just, it's kind of, it reminds me a lot of The Great Gatsby. In the style that the book is written, in the sense that, like, you know, I guess, like, these little moments that are happening are so drawn out and built upon, and just really kind of beautifully handled, if you will. Like, it's just these little, like, it reminds me a lot, like, they're basically having, like, a party, I believe, or a get-together, and it's England, so it's not, like, America, but it's, like, before World War II, And it's very, like, just very fashionable, which is what makes me think of The Great Gatsby in a sense. And it's just really well done. Probably, like, saying a lot of surface stuff. I haven't read these books in a while, but I need to come to them again. All right. So the next book I'm going to talk about is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. So once again, this is a book that I read or heard about through school. I read it for summer reading prior to my junior year. And when I read it, like, I talked about earlier, like, how I'm really not good at keeping up with being assigned to read certain things. But with summer reading, it's kind of different because you're not put in a spot where, like, the next day you have to respond to what you read to and think of something clever. Like, you have the whole summer to go at your own pace and read this book and pick apart what you want. And that ended up being such a blessing for me because not only was this book my favorite, but, like, it challenged me in new ways. Arguably, it's a book that, like, made me the reader I am today. We had to write essays on 3 different topics. We had to, like, pick all these quotes out and, like, pick out, I think, like, 10 quotes for each. There were 3 themes we had to focus on. And then after we found these quotes, we had to write essays on each of the themes, like, a page long. And I had so much fun doing it, like, and arguably the book in our modern day, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but it's definitely kind of, I'm not going to say racist in its approach, but it's not the healthiest book to pick apart when talking about race. But I think it presents itself in a very liberating way. And I think for a lot of people who may have come to this book, it sort of maybe open their eyes to certain oppressions that occur. You know, and obviously Atticus is not the, you know, is kind of a golden boy. You know, we're not going to argue that isn't true, but I think that as looking at the text for what it is, and not that stupid published text that was, like, not even technically a book, which I don't really care about. I don't even know why I'm mentioning it. I don't take it seriously, but I think it's an excellent book, and I would tell anybody to pick it up because it's really, really good. So 2 books left. I'm going to try to finish it in, like, a few minutes. The World According to Garp. Bye! I can't think of the author's name. John something, maybe? Either way, this book, I'm always kind of surprised looking back that it's a favorite because I don't inherently remember loving it that much, but then when I really picked my brain to figure out the parts I loved, I remember really relating to Garp and his, like, want to write, his desire to write, and the descriptions in the book, and just, again, how well written it was. And I came to this book because Robin Williams had just died, and he was a big part of my life and growing up, and when I saw he had but in this movie, and it was made from a book, I quickly got it from the library and read it and fell in love with it. So, very good book. And the final book, this is not all my favorite books, but, like, for this episode, is The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Again, forget the author's name, but it is about this teacher named Miss Brodie who is in her prime. The creme de la creme. Short book. Excellent. Actually, I was introduced to it by a movie of the same name with Maggie Smith. Credit to Up Yours Downstairs doing an episode on it. Wow, it's really good. The book and the movie. I read it last year. I can't believe it's been a year, but yeah, I read it last year. Excellent book. Excellent movie. I read it during a power outage we had because we had, like, a big snowstorm and it was really windy, and our power usually doesn't go out, but this time it did, which is great. So, but yeah, definitely a great, great book. I would highly recommend it, that you read it, and watch the movie as well, because Maggie Smith is kind of amazing. Like, you can't really argue with that. So, yeah. And again, here's the trend again. The book is exceptionally well written. So, with that all being said, we'll be right back. Hang tight. So with all that being said, if I can talk over the geese flying above me, that ends this episode. My favorite books, part one. Next episode I will continue with my list. And I should have said in the beginning, this is my fictional favorite books. I do have a list of nonfiction books, which will probably take up a few episodes as well. But I hope you enjoyed it. I know, kind of getting back on the bicycle now, so definitely, you know, the reason it kind of feels awkward is because there are other people walking near me, and I tend to, like, get shy and, like, not want to talk. So if you ever hear me stammer, that's why. You learn something new. And another thing, the reason I'm not reading as much is because I'm working on a project. Oopsie, I'm so sorry. I just touched the microphone for no apparent reason. I'm working on a project called Level Story. It's an online magazine, which is free to read. It's on issue.com, issuu.com. Just search Level Story and you'll find it. It's a book about story and video games. Working on the second issue, all about a video game called Firewatch. So please check it out. Please and thank you. This podcast is continuing, so don't go anywhere. We're still going to read Les Miserables. I hope you stick around for the ride. I know I will. Walking is amazing. This weather is amazing. And I enjoyed every moment of recording today. So thanks for keeping me company. And with all that being said, if you want to learn more, right now, I don't have a website to give you. We're changing a lot of things in books as bad as Twilight, i.e. Spoilers. I will not be doing the podcast anymore. But luckily, Brittany will still be doing it, and we haven't officially announced it yet, but, you know, we will soon, so don't worry about it. But anyway, so please check that out. I'll talk about the new website soon, and it'll be a fun time, but this podcast will be a part of our new podcast network. Even though I'm not continuing with Books as Bad as Twilight, I will be continuing to be a part of it. It's just going to be Brittany's baby and not mine anymore. I'm letting that part go. So definitely keep listening. It will be on our new website, and when that website is up, I will tell you about it. All right, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you all next time. Goodbye.